Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Whisker Report. We're a podcast dedicated to helping anyone in the pet industry, whether you're in animal welfare or running a for-profit pet business, to get some PR and visibility and buzz for what you do. I'm Mary Tan, one of the hosts of the show, and we are currently waiting for my co-host, Alexandra Card. But, you know, she is zipping across the world. She just flew to France. And perhaps she's got some internet and technical issues. You just never know where Alex is. So we're just going to get started. And if she makes it, that's awesome. And of course, we are joined by our fabulous producer, Mark Winter of Pet Life Radio. How you doing this week, Mark?
Hi, Mary. I'm good. I'm cold. Even though we're in Florida, it's cold here. It's like 50. I mean, right now my studio says 75 and I'm still feeling kind of cold, but probably like a balmy day for you.
Oh my God. I just took my dog out for a walk before this and like it's freaking freezing. I had my parka and everything on, and that just goes with living in Minnesota as well as all the other
stuff
that's
going on
here.
Remember last year you got locked out of your house and it was like freezing outside and you had no coat?
Yes, I had to run to the neighbors because I got locked out of my house and it was, I would say it was about 2 degrees. That was not a fun day at all. And I remained frozen for the rest of that day. So what kind of shows do you have on this week on Pet Life Radio?
We have coming up tomorrow, actually, we're having Alexa Ray Joel on,
who is Billy Joel's daughter.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I'm hoping she'll bring her father, but we'll see. I don't know. I keep asking.
Wow. Yeah. So Pet Life Radio is one of the first network of pet podcasts since the 90s, right, Mark?
What? No, we're since 2007.
Oh, why did I think that you started in the 90s?
Well, I was in radio, but no, Pet Life Radio is since 2007. So it's still going on 19 years. So, yeah.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Well, we, of course, here at the Whisker Report are very honored to be part of Pet Life Radio. And you can do PR for yourself. And Alex, Mark, and I are going to try to help you each and every single week. So today we're bringing you a different part of the public relations world. And our guest is very special. He's not in the pet industry, but he's an expert in one aspect of public relations that every business or animal rescue needs to know. We are talking about crisis communication. It just takes one wayward employee or a tragic accident that can put your business or rescue at risk for a bad reputation. And you know, here at Whisker Media, we know all about that. We've actually dealt with some terrible cases in the pet industries. We had one case where a doggy daycare, all of the employees walked out because they didn't like the new ownership. So the new owner called us and said, what can we do to repair the reputation? The employees were going out and blasting them on social media, and they had the client list and they started calling clients. Just a horrible situation. Then we worked on a really tragic case where a boarding facility had an employee who actually beat and killed a 6-month-old golden retriever. So that's another tragic case. And she had the media knocking on your door. But, you know, it's important in PR to really reach out to all the stakeholders. And dealing with a relentless media, which has a thirst for doom and gloom in the search for ratings, is all things that you need to consider. Of course, there's no one better to talk about crisis communications than my former colleague, Craig Envelson, who's a retired police chief now, who has seen some terrible stuff. And he is a wonderful resource to teach us how to handle when bad things happen to your pet or nonprofit. And joining me now is Craig. Craig, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Mary. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Craig. How you doing?
Good. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah. So, well, first, can you tell us a little bit about your background and also what you did in the police department where you had to deal with the media. And then, of course, the most important thing we got to get out of the way. Tell us about your pets.
My pets. I have a three-year-old silver lab by the name of Aspen, who is finally beginning to calm down. She was quite the handful when I first got her. So I live on a 25-acre farm, and she kind of has the run of the place. So when other people show up, she gets a little excited and kind of likes to jump on people. So we've gone through a little bit of training to try to get her to stop doing that. We're getting better, slowly getting better. That's my only pet.
Wow. Well, you need more because you live on a farm.
Yeah, and all.
So tell us about, you worked for the city of Brooklyn Park since you were a kid, basically. Tell us about, what you did there and how you worked with the media.
I was there for about 32 years. And you're right, I was a kid when I started, although I was bald by the time I was 25. I did pretty much everything. I worked the road. It's a city of about 80,000 people. And so I did, obviously, responding to 911 calls. And then I was a detective, deputy chief. And then the last 9 years of my career, I was the police chief, which is where I had a lot of interaction with the media. A lot of times it was, it was crisis communications, or at times it was just they wanted to reach out and talk about different things that we were doing in the community.
And tell us, what's your experience been with the media? So so people know, we both worked at the city of Brooklyn Park, which is a city just a few miles out of Minneapolis, for those who don't know Minnesota really well. And it's a really unique suburb, and that it is a minority-majority population. And I believe the latest statistics were that, 3 in 8 or some kids are in poverty there. And so you are very, very busy. So tell us, what were your impressions of working with the news media?
It depended, to be honest with you. When it came to crisis communication, if we had a significant incident that happened, the biggest thing I could tell people, to be honest with you, in dealing with the media is to take your time. A lot of times the media has deadlines they're trying to meet, whether that's print media, television, or whatever. And they're going to try to push you to give an interview that meets their deadline. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. They have a job to do. But what I learned was you need to do your interview when you are prepared to give your interview. You have to gather all the information, have all the details ready at hand. Because if you don't, you're going to slip up and you're going to say something that's going to harm your reputation or harm your organization's reputation.
And do you suggest having talking points? Like, how did you prepare? So as a police officer, you do get some media training, I imagine. So as a small pet business owner or a small rescue, you've never dealt with anything like this. And so you're just freaking out. Do you suggest talking points? How did you do it?
It gets easier with time, but the biggest thing is to try to prepare for what you think the questions are going to be asked of you. And quite frequently with the media, what I was always told was to try to infuse positive things about your department or your organization. What I found quite frequently with the media is they're there to talk about whatever the particular issue is. And if you try to veer off from that, they'll listen to you, but it's not going to become part of the story. They're simply going to want to talk about the issue that is at hand. Frequently, what I would do, to be honest with you, is I would get as many people around me as possible and ask them what questions they would have regarding whatever incident was, because I didn't particularly know what people were going to be interested in regarding that specific situation. A lot of times there were questions that quite honestly caught me off guard and prepared me better for dealing with the media.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is called the bridging technique. It's where you start a question, but you pivot where you always end on a positive note. So it would be something like, say, Craig is asking me a question. I'm going to say, Craig, we don't know all the details, but what is important to know, and that's the bridging statement, is that we are a transparent organization and we are going to do whatever we can do to find the perpetrator of this crime. And that's called the bridging report. So there's a lot of people here who, like, I don't want to go on TV. I just want to give a statement. I just want to email it to them. What do you suggest?
That actually just leads to more questions. If you just simply release a press release, a lot of times that's just going to leave more questions, and it's going to look like you're trying to dodge the issue. They're going to want face-to-face time. And quite honestly, what we would do is, if it was a very large significant incident, instead of doing a bunch of one-offs, doing something with this TV station at 11, then this TV station at 11:30, the best thing to do, bring them all together at the same time and just do one press conference. Because then a question from this station would potentially run on this station over here. If I'm making sense of what I'm saying there.
Yeah, that was actually my next question was, when should you hold a press conference? And I think what you mentioned earlier, like a press conference would scare most people to death. So you've done how many in your career?
I don't know, but a lot of them. Yeah, a lot of them.
And the first time you did a press conference, like, what did that feel like?
You're right. I was scared to death, because once you open it up for questions, you have no idea where it's going to go. And the last thing you want to do is bring a bad reputation to yourself and to your organization. So, you know, in our situation, was it the reputation of the police department? Is the reputation of the entire city? So I had council members, city managers, everybody watching to ensure that I didn't make a mistake. So, yeah, I was scared to death. There's no doubt about it.
And what's your suggestion? For example, say something happens at a pet business and you're working with police. Most people would be inclined to say, just talk to police. I don't want to talk to you. But the situation happened at your pet business or rescue. So how do you work with police in that case?
Before I would talk to the media, I would definitely talk to the police, because the mistake that you do not want to make is release some kind of information that is potentially going to cause a problem in the criminal investigation. So I would consult with the police and say, what can I and what can I not say? And quite frequently, if there's a criminal investigation that's ongoing, there are certain details that you can release, but there are a lot of details that you cannot release. So I would certainly talk with your police department and their public information officer. Quite frequently for us, we had a lot of incidents that were involving, you know, we had incidents that happened at schools, or we had incidents that happened in businesses. We had a very significant incident that happened at a grocery store. And I work hand in hand with the people at those businesses, because to your point, Mary, they have a reputation to protect as well. And I don't want them to say something that's going to harm the criminal investigation, but I want them to be able to say what they need to say too, because otherwise it's going to look like they're trying to run or they're trying to hide from whatever happens.
And so, you know, there's a big difference in police departments about how friendly they are to the media. So would you say the majority of police would say to a business owner, hey, this is what you can talk about and this is what you can't, or do you need to spur that conversation on?
The police department would spur that conversation on, because the last thing that we would want to do is to harm the criminal investigation. Because if that criminal investigation gets harmed and charges are brought or not brought based upon what we said or didn't say a month, 2 months earlier, that's simply going to bring, you know, discredit to both the police department and the organization itself. So quite frequently, I would spur the conversation. And when we would have a press conference, I would be there right with that individual. I'll bring it back to that situation with the grocery store. It was the manager and the general manager of the grocery store. And you can imagine all the individuals that he and she had to answer to. So I said, I will go up there with you. And when the media would begin to ask questions related to the criminal investigation, I would step forward and answer those questions for them.
And I bet they were appreciative.
Yeah. Yes, extremely appreciative. The only part that was a little bit difficult there was we had our public information officer, we had our elected officials, and then that very large grocery chain, you can imagine, they had individuals from across the nation that were calling them saying, here's what you need to say, here's what you need to do. And at times that caused a little bit of conflict between the store manager and myself as it related to what we were going to do.
Yeah, I can remember one situation where I also got quoted from the city, and I think that angered the PR people at the grocery store. And this talks about, like, there can't be too many hands in the pie, right? That's where it gets really screwed up, because I remember in this situation, the local paper here, the Star Tribune, called me for a comment, and this was basically a very bad grocery store shooting years ago. And then I just said like a really bland comment. And then the grocery store chain communications people reached out to me and were really mad that I spoke. And I said, I didn't say anything, you know? And so I learned from that, like, I'm just going to refer everything to everybody else. And you know what? I think if you're a pet business, your best crutch is to just say, talk to the police. Am I right?
Yes and no, because it depends upon what the media is looking to get. You know, if it's simply related to the investigation itself, absolutely refer them to your police department. But at times, the media is going to want some of the background related to the story, and the police aren't necessarily going to be able to answer those questions. So I would consult with the police department. Again, you don't want to look like you're running or you're hiding, but yet you don't want to interfere with the criminal investigation itself.
Yeah. Now, have you ever had any reporters? So there was a big Vikings football player here who, this was years ago, once called me and said, I need help with the media. There's a reporter in my bushes. So there's a lot of sneaky reporters out there. And he lived in a gated community, so I'm not sure how they got in. But I can tell you, as a former reporter, when I was in Las Vegas, I tried to sneak onto Nellis Air Force Base. You don't do that. The military is not very nice at that point, because I was trying to get some interview from Air Force families, and that was a really stupid idea, but I was a young reporter then. So how do you handle the ones that just show up, are relentless, ambush you, that sort of stuff? The stuff that, you know, you see a lot on TV too.
I didn't have a lot of that. When it comes to your larger media outlets, they're pretty professional, to be honest with you. Sometimes the, you know, times are changing as far as what is a reporter. I remember early on in my career, an individual came in to my office. I think I was a captain or something at the time. And about halfway through the conversation, he said, well, do you mind if I take out my little handheld camera here and shoot this interview? And at the time, I thought, yeah, well, big deal, right? Well, the setting was horrible. And then he started to play gotcha. And he came up with all kinds of questions that were irrelevant to the reason he was there in my office. And it came off not very well for me and for the police department. So I would just hesitate. Minneapolis is kind of the hub of national attention right now. And
that's an understatement.
Yeah. A lot of that is coming from social media reporters, for lack of a better term. And I've noticed and listened on the TV and the radio as far as some of the larger markets are beginning to judge what is a journalist. I would simply caution individuals that if it's not an outlet that you recognize, I don't know that I would do it, to be honest with you. You know, if it's one of your local newspapers or televisions you recognize, going back to everything that we talked about earlier as far as press conferences and stuff, if it's just a one-off, hi, this is Mary Tan from wherever, I don't know that I would necessarily do that. Even though social media is extremely important, I understand that. That's a lot of times where they're going to play the gotcha game, and they're going to try to get you to say something that they're trying to make you look bad, where I found that true journalists are much more professional than that. They have a job to do, but they're not there to play gotcha.
So what do you think, gosh, when you watch all the networks right now with what's going on in Minneapolis, they're calling them journalists and, you know, they're YouTubers or whatever. But now there's YouTubers with millions of followers that are bigger than the local media. And so I am thinking that you should maybe put them off and do some quick research on them and look how many followers they have. And I mean, if they're a huge group or if they're a well-known YouTuber or whatever, it's going to show up on social media. Luckily, being out of government, we don't thankfully have to deal with that anymore. It's just a really hard situation, don't you agree?
I do. The problem there is, where does it end? You know, like you just said, there's thousands of YouTubers out there or whatever the case might be. And if you're dealing with a crisis, you have limited time that's available to you. And trying to satisfy 20, 30, 100 different YouTubers that want to talk to you about a specific situation, you're not going to have time to do it. To be quite honest with you, you're just not going to have the ability to do it.
Yeah, what's really mind-boggling is that they're starting to break news. you know, like they have access to like Justice Department officials and they can call up Pam Bondi and ask her the situation just like somebody from the New York Times. It's just amazing. And, you know, a lot of them are really young, you know, 20. I mean, that's who the YouTubers are nowadays. Well, you know what? We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about social media with Craig.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell. She was very alert. She was going on 5 mile walk.
She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's CARNIVORA.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back. We have so much to ask you, Craig, but I want to talk about social media, because that's where a lot of the horrible stuff tends to come across, because people won't say it to your face, but everybody has a wicked keyboard and will tell you things that they would never say to your face. So if you're a small pet business and you have evil people coming at you, or just customers that don't like you for whatever reason, how did you handle all the negativity?
You're right. People will say things. We called them keyboard terrorists. It's individuals that will be nice to your face and then go home and just absolutely light you up on social media. We actually designated two different people within our department to simply monitor social media and to respond to specific inquiries. Definitely when they were putting out misinformation regarding a specific situation. Or sometimes it actually ended up being a positive thing. Someone would get on and say, I was at that scene and I saw what happened. We would then reach out to that individual and say, well, I didn't know that you were a witness. Please come forward and talk to the detective or talk to the patrol officer, whatever the case might be. So it can be positive and negative. From my perspective, where I was at the time, I didn't have the ability to keep up with everything that was going on with social media. So depending upon how large your organization is or your company is, if you have somebody that you can dedicate to simply monitor those things, it can be very beneficial for you, both positive and at times negative.
So do you think what you write on social media also has to be the same messaging that, for example, you give in a media interview or you give in a press conference?
Absolutely. So like I said, we had two individuals that would monitor what was going on social media. We didn't necessarily have them respond. They would simply consult with either the public information officer or myself. And I know a lot of this doesn't apply to potentially a smaller rescue, but the message has to be consistent. So when they would see something that was being posted, that was disinformation or whatever the case might be, they would consult with the people that deal with the media more frequently to decide if I would respond or give them the information so that they could respond on social media. So yeah, you're absolutely right. It has to be one consistent theme, one consistent message.
So with a lot of small pet businesses, you know, it's the owner and then their employees. What do you think the qualities, somebody who is a leader of an organization, how do you pick the person that can handle your social media? Because most of the time, it's the owner doing their own social media. But in this case, that's impossible. Is there somebody like with special, like what should you look for in an employee's qualifications to handle the social media part of a crisis?
Someone that delves into all the different aspects of social media. I have to be honest with you, I am not a social media expert. I'm not even on Facebook. never have been, there probably never will be. But the Gen Zers of the world, you know, they're on Facebook, they're on Instagram, they're on TikTok. There's so many different media areas that need to be monitored. You need to find someone that's very savvy in doing that. And again, you don't need somebody that's going to go out and respond. You just need somebody that's going to be able to monitor it and let you know, hey, here's what's going on platform XYZ. And then as the owner, you need to decide, are we going to respond? How bad is this disinformation? Some of it you can simply ignore. There's people out there that are going to say things and do things that the general public is going to look at and go, yeah, no, that makes no sense to me. You can ignore those kind of things. And again, I'm not a social media expert. I'm just saying regarding what you would and would not have to respond to, it depends.
And would you say that it would be worth it to hire a consultant if you can afford it in a situation like this? Or do you think people can handle it themselves?
I'm going to give you a horrible answer, but it depends. You know, if it's a very significant incident that's threatening your reputation and your company or your rescue, there are individuals out there that simply specialize in crisis communication. If we're talking it's going to affect your livelihood, I would suggest that there's definitely a good opportunity there to reach out to someone that's an expert, because the last thing that you want to do is have this thing completely ruin your reputation and shut down your business and, you know, harm your livelihood. Other situations where it's not a criminal investigation or those kind of situations, I would say people probably have the ability to handle a lot of that themselves.
So what about if somebody writes profanity-laced comments at you? Should you delete them? Should you block them? What should you do?
Ignore it. We talked about that quite a bit, that it's still a First Amendment issue, right? So if people get on your Facebook page and say a bunch of things derogatory, use a bunch of profanity, if you're going to go in and start to block those or remove those posts, you're really censoring what people have the ability to say. Now, in our situation, obviously, we were a government entity, so there was a lot more focus on what was on our Facebook page and other things. So we made the conscious decision that if people are going to get on and use profanity or whatever the case might be, we just ignored it and let the general public look at it and go, yeah, no, that doesn't fit specific situation. Because what people have to realize is a lot of times on social media, the herd, for lack of a better term, will kind of self-correct. So when someone gets on and, you know, uses a profanity-laden comment, a lot of times the rest of the individuals on there will correct that by themselves.
And, you know, I think on Facebook you can hide comments too. So then the person knows that their post wasn't deleted, but they don't realize that their posts were hidden. Well, we need to take one final quick break, and when we get back, we'll have Craig's final thoughts.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with Craig. So, Craig, how has the media changed in terms of crisis communications over your time at the police department?
How has it changed?
Yeah. I mean, when you started out, there was no social media.
Which goes back to my point a little bit about, and again, it's difficult. I understand that for a rescue if it's, you know, one or two people. But if it's a social media situation, you need to find someone that's very savvy in that world. And you need to decide what you're going to respond to and what you're not going to respond to. The one thing I would say about social media is you can go down a rabbit hole very fast. Because if you respond to one comment, 1,000 people are going to look at that one response and you're going to get 1,000 questions, right? So you need to decide what's worth responding to and what's not worth responding to. And above all, you need to just stay, for lack of a better term, on the high road and just stay professional. You know, I was saying earlier that, you know, Minneapolis right now is kind of the epicenter of media and press conferences right now. I've seen some press conferences that elected officials did not stay professional, and they made themselves look even worse by how they responded. And the thing that caught me off guard is the community expects you to stay professional. And if you own a company, you own a rescue, if you get into these wars and start using vulgarities and stuff in response to social media posts or whatever, you're going to lose credibility very, very fast.
What do you think's going on in the city of Minneapolis? And you know some of these folks, and you actually did work with the governor since you were police chief and that sort of thing. What's going into the planning and what's going behind the scenes, do you think, when it comes to communications?
In Minneapolis?
Yeah, or in any big, you know, or what's happening with the communications people who are dealing with ICE right now? Do you think, I mean, they're working probably 24/7 and, you know, and they're constantly having to get the same talking points together and making sure everybody is saying the same thing. Do you think that's a lot of what's going on behind the scenes?
I think everyone's trying to do their best, but things are unfolding so fast that it's difficult to, you know, I had said earlier, is take your time. But at times there's so much coming at you so fast from so many different directions that you have to say something. Again, you just need to remain professional and take the high road, regardless of how emotional you are on both sides of the aisle, regardless of how emotional that you are, you need to remain professional to keep your credibility.
Yeah, I can only imagine, like, these people have got to, like the communications folks especially, they've got to start getting burned out, or they need a long vacation if this ever. It's just crazy how in the world now one thing happens after another. Riots, protests, you know, in Iran, there's an upheaval. It's just crazy what is happening. Well, we have come to the end of our show. And Greg, give us some parting thoughts for, you know, our listeners, you know, who are probably solopreneurs and they're small pet business owners. They don't have a lot of resources, but they have to do it themselves. Share what you think would be good for them to hear.
You know, from a media perspective, what I found very beneficial was trying to build a relationship with media members before the crisis happens, because it's very difficult to create that relationship in the middle of a crisis. What I would say is, if you have the opportunity, you know, if you live in a smaller town, there's not a ton of outlets that you would have to deal with. So if you have the opportunity to talk with them or potentially get to know them ahead of time, maybe you could reach out to them and ask if they wanted to do a story related to your rescue and the great work that you're doing. If they choose to do it, they choose to do it. If not, they not. But at least you're reaching out to them and having a relationship ahead of time, so that if you do have something that becomes a large media situation, you do have some allies in the media that you built a relationship with ahead of time.
Yeah, that's a great point. I would suggest, you know, and I always tell them, even these little small town papers, those people are allies, you know, and those are people, I don't know, I always found that I could trust them. And it's usually these little papers have no staff. It's usually just one person working on the whole paper. And so if you can give them stories, and I know Brooklyn Park got a lot of media coverage when you were there that was positive. They had a little local cable outlet called News 12, and they covered everything the police department, when you got a new dog, when you got new police officers. And so, you know, taking advantage of that. So finally, are you happy to be retired now and not have to deal with the world's problems?
You said that very well. As I've been watching things unfold down in Minneapolis again, I feel for those that are going through it. I have empathy for them. I really do, because I know that they're up 23 out of 24 hours trying to deal with that situation. Am I happy that I'm not up 23 out of 24 hours? Absolutely. 1,000%. And frequently I leave this thing somewhere where I'm not even around it anymore, because I used to have this thing on my hip for 24/7, 365, and I don't have to do that anymore. Retirement's a good thing, Mark.
Oh, by the way, since this is a podcast, Craig was holding up his cell phone. And so, yeah, I know this is kind of early for you. So, you know, we thank you for getting up early with us.
Not a problem.
You and Alex are very similar. You're long sleepers, as I say. Well, thank you so much, Craig. And that's a wrap for this episode of The Whisker Report. We're so excited to be doing this for all of you out there who are working every day to make life better for animals. Got a question you want us to answer? Reach out to us on Instagram or Facebook under Whisker Media, and we'll try to answer it in a future episode. So as we always say, bark loud and purr smart. See you next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.